when you started playing the second chant, reveal thyself, reveal thyself, I was remembering when I learned to love that chant, because I had never liked it very much. In the course of our Ananda life, we have human preferences that come in, and there's lots of different choices, and everybody has favorites. And that chant, for some reason, never spoke to me very much, except from 1986 until about 2006, 20 years. I had the opportunity with a few friends to travel to India on a pilgrimage journey about a dozen or more times. And one of the places that we would always go to was the Mahasamadhi Mandir of Sri Yukteswar, Master's own guru, whose picture graces our altar. It happens to be in his ashram in Puri, India. This is all described years in my master's hermitage takes place in Puri. And then Master talks about going back to India in 1935 and his guru died. I'm not quite sure how much is in autobiography and how much is in the book Mejda, but Sri Yukteswar was sitting in the lotus posture. He left his body. There's a photograph of Master sitting next to Sri Yukteswar, except Sri Yukteswar has his head up like this and his mouth slightly open, and you realize it's his empty body. It's still his body, but Sri Yukteswar isn't in it anymore. And in one of those books, it describes how they dug a big hole in the sand in Puri, lined it with bricks, and then just placed Sri Yukteswar's body in there, facing the Jagannath Temple, which is this huge ancient holy temple there in Puri. And then they put a platform over it and then built a very small little chapel. I know those of you who've been there, you're all going like this. You all know exactly what I'm talking about. And that place is one of my, when I make a list of when I get to go back to India someday, that's where I want to sit. So I'm sitting in that place, meditating with our group. It's a very small chapel. It's half or a quarter the size of this dais. It's very little, with a nice porch around it. And I love to meditate there. It's just fabulous. So I'm sitting there meditating there, having what has always been for me a really wonderful experience. And then it's time for our group to move on. And as it happened, Michael Gornick, whom many of you know, he is the founder of the Polestar community that was in Hawaii until the volcano ate it. And now he's making a community in Colorado, but he's a wonderful musician. And he was in our group and he had the harmonium. And all of a sudden he starts playing this chant. The human mind being what it is, there I am, you know, I mean, the whole thing is just fantastic. And the first thing I think of is, oh no, not that chant. Just like, and it was just an appalling moment, but nonetheless, there it was. But then I surrendered to it and discovered that I loved it. And the reasons I didn't like it, God knows only, really. I hardly know myself. There was only two words, and two words are usually not nearly enough for me. There have to be a whole lot of other words. There have to be all this intellectual content. I have to be able to admire. I mean, you know, there it goes. But Michael loved that chant, and he took that moment, and he thought it was the best place, it was the best possible thing to do. And, of course, he was totally right, because it took the spiritual path, and just with those two words, the only thing that might be simpler is joy, 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 joy. He just took it down to those two words, and he described the whole story. The whole story is thyself, which means king with a capital K, as our Bible puts it, Bible reading puts it today, or however you want to say it. And we're talking to him, her, it, whatever you want to say. You're speaking directly to the living presence that is always there, but for some weird reason is hidden from us. And we're saying, reveal thyself. And it's a relationship. It's a relationship in which that grace could come to you. When I was responsible decades ago for teaching the first meditation classes, which I had for a long time, I had a little program about the most important things that I really wanted people to hear about what is meditation. We're talking 35 years ago, so it was a different world in those days. Well, familiarity doesn't make people actually wiser. It just means there's more information just sort of rolling around. In some ways, it was easier when there was less information rolling around. But I wanted to explain to people, this is a relationship. We have this word self-realization. We have this idea that we are capable, especially Master's marvelous dispensation of restoring to us the practice of Kriya Yoga, which is, of course, finally an initiation in which you learn a specific technique. But everything that Master brought, that Swami elucidated, it's all the path of Kriya Yoga. And the word Kriya means action. Master had the whole of the Sanskrit language, or any language he wanted. He could have created words to say what he was teaching. And he chose that it was going to be called Kriya Yoga, or perhaps Lahiri Mahashaya and Babaji did that ahead of him. But somebody who knew what they were doing, the word is action. And that's why we have to say, we don't, but we should say, the Kriya Yoga of Lahiri Mahashaya that he received from Babaji, or we can say of Yogananda, because it's just an action. It's an action related to uplifting our consciousness. And the reason he wanted it to be that is, well, I'm going to say, because it's active. Because it's a decision that we ourselves make about how we're going to live in this world. And that's why when we say Kriya Yoga, we're not just talking about what you will learn after a year of practice and proper preparation, not for any reason to keep it from anyone, but only so that when you receive it, you'll know what to do with it. You know, if you're given something that's too complicated, you don't know what to do with it. You can't handle it. You can't make it work. So you spend a little time sort of learning so that when it comes into your hands, you'll know what to do with it. But from the beginning, we are practicing Kriya because we are taking a specific action that's going to influence our consciousness, that's going to change our lives. And so deliberately what Master did is he put spiritual responsibility into the only place where it belongs, which is in the hands of the aspirant. It can't be given to you by a priest, it can't be given to you by a ritual, it can't be given to you by going to a place or becoming a member or donating lots of money, anything. None of that. And Master came to reform that reality. My dear friend Sanjay Arora in India, who was our tour guide for all those 20 years that we go over there doing those pilgrimages and remains a friend, when he bought an apartment. I mean, this is like, I'm talking in the late 80s when India was a little different and we were certainly different in not knowing anything. He bought an apartment and, first of all, he had to pay for the whole thing, so it just sat empty while he paid it off. There were mortgages at that time. Then he finally paid it off, but he couldn't move in for 5 months because it wasn't astrologically auspicious for 5 months. So he had to wait 5 months for the auspicious day. Then he had to hire the priest to come in and do all the proper rituals. The proper rituals involved building a fire in a fire pit in the living room and cracking coconuts on the walls, which meant that the whole thing had to be cleaned and repainted after that was finished, all of this. But in the context of that, he said, Hinduism is the only religion in the world where you pay someone else to practice it for you. Because it was unthinkable that he would move into that apartment without the proper ritual, but he didn't have any idea how to do it. He had to pay someone to do it. And there's a whole profession, you know, a whole caste of pujaris, and that's their job, is they practice Hinduism for people. Master said, no, into your own hands, that's where it goes. And we make this decision. But then there is that important element, which is what I was saying when I would teach the beginning meditation class. Because there's lots of people use the word meditation in lots of ways. And some of it is just, I visualize, I imagine, I relax myself by thinking that I'm on a beach and the white unicorn comes, you know, and the fairy godmother sprinkles me. And all of these things are great. I mean, in a sense, because it will relax you. It will take you to a more calm and uplifted place. But it's not a relationship with truth. It's a relationship with alternate versions of the fantasy that we live here. People think this world is real because it's so well constructed. It's just a extremely well done illusion in which everything is very consistent. And we can all sort of agree with each other about, well, what the purpose of life is, where happiness comes from, all of these different things. But it's all an extremely well-constructed illusion. And the illusionist, Maya, or the illusionist, Babaji, Divine Mother, there's a power standing behind it. Come brings us back, doesn't it? Reveal thyself. Reveal thyself. Show me what this world really is. Teach me how to do Kriya. Teach me how to do those actions which will entice you to reveal yourself. And of course, so in the, even when we are isolating ourselves as much as human beings isolate themselves in this world, in meditation, we go to a particular place, sequestered as we can be, depending on our living situation, as sequestered as we can be, we close our eyes, we close our ears, we stop talking, we try to open our minds to a new reality, open our consciousness to a new reality, we practice Kriya, we take action that will bring us to another reality. But the power of it, the true power of it, is not just that we have decided to practice Kriya, but that there is a loving reality on the other side of us that's cheering us on all the way through. We have the best friend on the other side who really wants us to succeed. You know, it's so deep within us to have someone understand us and believe us. Isn't it so? I remember one rather colloquial speaking girl said to me about the man she married. She just said this word, he gets me, like that. And I didn't really know what that slang meant. Maybe you all get it right away. But what she meant was, he looks at me, he knows who I am. And we all know that's not so obvious, is it? How many times does our heart just break in two because someone we expected to know who we are shows that they don't. That is the power of the guru. That is the power that I experience from Swami Kriyananda, and we all continue to experience from him, from Master, from Babaji, from Divine Mother herself. We are not alone. That's the worst illusion. And one of the most carefully constructed ones. It starts with these bodies. You know, even if you love someone, you can squish up against them with every power that you have, but you will never merge. You will always come apart if this is what you're thinking of. And so this body always walks away alone. And we fall for it. We fall for it on a very, very deep level, incarnation after incarnation. We keep making another one of these. And each one of them appears to be separate. But this is the illusion. And we begin to take those actions which will dissolve the illusion, and our coach on the other side, the loving power of the divine, is guiding us like this. And then we begin to realize, oh, this is kind of a love relationship, isn't it? And it involves this freedom, this closeness. Reveal thyself. Reveal thyself. And many of Master's wonderful prayers, they're very cheeky. You know, Divine Mother, I want you. I'm not going to be satisfied with playthings anymore. You've been tossing toys into the playpen, but I'm not going to be distracted anymore. I'm going to begin to scream, and I'm going to not stop screaming until you come. I'm going to wake up all your other children, and they will begin to wail too, and we will all be screaming here until you reveal yourself, until you show us that something completely other is happening. Now, far more elegantly, in one of the most beautiful passages in the Bible, the King with the capital K, God says, you fed me. I was naked and you clothed me. I hungered and you fed me. I was lonely and in prison. It's just, the Bible is so, the power of Scripture. Because when you read true Scripture, the Gita, the Bible, the Old Testament, the New Testament, wherever part of it you're reading, the Hebrew prayers, whatever it might be, when you go into it, it becomes a doorway into. And it's miraculous. I grew up Jewish. I have become devoted to Jesus through Master's teachings in the self-realization way. As a consequence, I read the Bible. I have read the Bible, not like people who only read the Bible, but I've read it often enough to understand how you can only read the Bible and you'll be just fine. Because every time you go through those words, you just hear something in it. This time I heard, I was in prison, I was lonely, and you visited me. Just, those are simple words, aren't they? But you can feel it. You can feel what God is saying. You can feel the kriya he's demanding of us. And what we're trying to do here, you see, is we're trying to see what's really going on. This is what the masters see. I was thinking today, just when I was sitting here, Swamiji used to often say, and especially as his body aged, or it came up more often then, he would say, I really don't feel any age at all, is what he would say. And last night when we were gathered here, I made reference to, I moved to Ananda in 71, so 21 is my 50 years. And it's just like, I say that number, 50 years, and I commented last night, when you're 20, 50 seems like a big number. When you're 70, 50 seems like a small number. And it's a very interesting shift in your mind, but there's a wholly different shift where we want to go, which is what I was feeling Swami would say. He would just say, I just don't feel any age at all. Because where does age come from? We're eternal. We are as old as God. We are one with the infinite. We are literally infinite. So how can you be 12 or 21 or 97 or any of those things? This is just what we hang around in, this is the illusion. Reveal thyself. Reveal who I really am. It's not just show me this world outside of me. Show me me. And that's so hard for us. And the masters laugh at us because it's so easy for them. Swami Kriyananda said marvelously, I never identify with Swami Kriyananda, which I think he's speaking his own name. But he speaks of Swami Kriyananda. I never identify with Swami Kriyananda. He is an event for which I am responsible. Now just meditate on that thought of yourself as just an event for which you are responsible. It's a giant dinner party which lasts a really long time. However we want to call it, that's all that I'm doing. And every time I respond to this world as if it was a relationship with God. It is a relationship with God. When you came, when you did it to the least of them, you were doing it for me. This is what Mother Teresa of Calcutta said when ordinary journalists who were filming her, you know, like this. And she goes on the streets of Calcutta and sees some beggar dying in the gutter. And believe me, gutters in Calcutta are not places you really want to be. We sort of joke, whenever you see anything on the ground, you get very suspicious. You're not really sure where it came from, especially years ago. But there she was, and she just scoops this maggot-infested dying man up like this, holds him close to her, touches him like this. And the journalists who are, you know, there like with their cameras, she could just feel them. They could hardly bear what she was doing. And I saw a film about this too. Her face looks slightly puzzled. And then, she figures it out. And she says, oh, you see a maggot-infested beggar. She said, and she looks like this, I see the face of Christ. If you were walking down the street and saw someone you loved, just anyone you loved, what to speak of God, of Guru, just lying there, would you hesitate? You would rush to pick it up and help. Because to Mother Teresa, Jesus had revealed himself. And that's what we're here for. Just for that, just to break through, just to see it completely differently. Recently I read in a book that a definition of bhakti. Bhakti is the word we speak of when we're talking about how to love God. Bhakti is loving God. And we think of bhakti as, oh, I'm a bhakti, I like to dance to the divine, I like to chant. You know, all these, we think of it all in those ways. It's all those things that we do. Bhakti is transforming material energy into spiritual energy by the power of divine love. That's what we're doing. George Washington Carver, who was the black man who incarnated just at the end of the Civil War, and he was a great saint. He was known mostly as a scientist, but he was a saint. And he went through his divine destiny was to help the black people who had been enslaved to understand how to live free, because they didn't know. They'd been generations of enslavement. They had to learn to live free. So he had to teach them very practical things and figure out how they could support themselves. And he's especially known because he came up with hundreds of uses for the peanut, because in the southern farms, peanuts grew very easily, but they were always used as cattle food. And he saw them as this great divine benefit. And there's a wonderful little sequence about George Washington Carver. He got up every morning at 4 a.m. and wandered in the woods and talked to God. And he was in the woods, and he was walking through the woods, and he was looking at the forest, and he was talking to God, and he said, God, why did you make creation? And God said, George, that's a mighty big question for a little man like you. Okay. So then George said, well, God, then, why did you make me? And God said, better, George, but that's still a mighty big question for someone like you. So then George said, why did you make the peanut? And God said, now there's a question we can work on together. So he did. But George Washington Carver said, if you love anything enough, it will speak to you. And that's how he knew. He loved the peanut enough that the peanut told him, I can be paint, I can be oil, I can be food for people, I can be medicine, I can be hair tonic, I can be shampoo. I mean, it's like hundreds of things he made out of peanuts and transformed the whole economy. But he didn't do it as a scientist. He did it as someone who loved God. He was a bhakti. He transformed material energy into spiritual energy. And spiritual energy then could manifest in all these different forms. It looked like a peanut, but he knew that it wasn't. It was God himself. And it could be anything. And he transformed it with his love. It's so simple, isn't it? We don't have to know Sanskrit words. We don't have to understand any big story. We don't have to be philosophical. Swamiji was giving I was listening to a talk that Swami gave, probably in the 70s. It had, yes, of course, it was in the 70s. And this wonderful devotee, Haridas, who's not a Swami now, and he lives in Bangalore with his wife, Roma. Haridas came to Ananda when he was 18. And even in high school, he was very devoted to Master. And he was and is a great soul at 18. He was a great soul at 18. He was an 18-year-old great soul. And he went with Swamiji on this trip to Los Angeles. Swami said in that talk that Haridas had only been with Ananda for a few months. I think it was a little longer. Sometimes Swami will say things like, you know, recently, and it was like 12 years ago, which is not most people's idea of recent. But his sense of time was very different. So Haridas went to a television station because Swami was doing public programs. Haridas went to the station and tried to persuade them to have Swami come on and, you know, be a guest so that we could advertise the programs. And whoever he talked to was very well impressed with Haridas and said, maybe this other guy is interesting, but I don't know him and I know you. I want you to be on my program. So Haridas kind of comes back to Swami and said, you know, it didn't actually work out the way I tried to make it work out. They want me to be on the station. And Swami frankly says, you know, that he was a little horrified because he saw Haridas's potential, but it hadn't fully been manifested yet. But he thought, why not? So Haridas went on the program and talked to him. And Swami said he was magnificent. He said his answers were philosophically questionable, but every one of them was completely sincere. And he was wearing, as many of us wear, these gold, silver, and copper bangles. And he must have had it on his wrist or maybe a short sleeve shirt because the announcer said, what is that? Why are you wearing it? Haridas said, I don't rightly know. He said, it has something to do with astrology. He might have, or maybe he didn't even say that much. He said, but my guru recommended that I wear it, and every time I look at it, it reminds me of what I'm doing with my life. Reveal thyself. Everything will speak to you if we love it enough. But now here we are, you know, it's Christmas. It's the time of the year when the veil gets thinner. That's why we're all so happy, because the veil is thinner. But the degree to which we practice Kriya, which is the degree that which we take actions that will inspire our lover to come to us. We work so hard to attract each other, don't we? We work so hard to make love manifest in our lives. Just put that energy into the real Kriya, which is reveal thyself, to practice bhakti yoga, to transform all material energy into spiritual energy by the power of divine love. The curé d'art, the French saint, Jean Vianney, his life was extraordinary, beautiful soul. He would say often, if you knew how much God loves you, you would die for joy. Now realize, that is not a love that comes and goes. That is not, after I get it together and I'm perfect in this way and after I sort this out and resolve a few things, then. No. As we sit here now, each one of us and every aspect of creation and every human in the world on this side of the veil and in this life, in the astral world, we are totally, unconditionally, infinitely loved. What else are we looking for? And all that's required, we have to say it with a lot of force. Reveal thyself, Mother. Do not throw any more of those stupid little toys into my playpen. I've had it. with substitutes, and I'm going to wail and wake all my brothers and sisters. You must come to me.
So many hearts.